Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's cast, The Effective Manager Has a Playbook, Part 2. The questions this cast answers are, how can I grow my direct leadership skills? How can I develop my team's crisis response skills? And how can I share my managerial skills with my team? For the answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Hey folks, if you've been thinking about bringing manager tools into your organization, now is the perfect time to let us know. We're booking well into the early part of 2023, and we'd love to get you and your organization onto our calendar before things start filling completely up. Email us, email more specifically Maggie on our team. Her email is maggie@manager-tools.com, and she'll reply to you and let you know when we can come and join your organization. Mark, thank you for joining us for this series of podcasts.
My pleasure.
Last week, we started this topic by discussing the Effective Manager's Playbook. Folks, if you're listening now and you haven't listened to part one of this podcast, we do recommend you go back and listen. And last time, we began our conversation in respect to the fact that as a manager, you can create a playbook page on your very first iteration. So we're going to continue with that topic today.
Yeah. So I think where we left off was saying, here's the play we're going to run.
Yeah.
And we made the point that you want to ask for input, but you do so after you've already said it. We've made the case you don't say, here's what I think. You say, this is the play we're going to run, and then people can modify to their,
that's exactly
to their interest. Yeah. Because you've laid out the play you're going to run, input is unlikely, or no, it's less likely to be competing plans. Okay. It's going to be an input. It's going to be input to what is now on the table, your existing plan. While everyone talks about collaboration and everybody should be able to bring their own plans to the table, that's fine. I have no problem. We have no problem with 10 different plans on the table. But many people will appreciate having a plan because it makes it easier for them because you've already provided a structure, a fundamental way of approaching the problem that allows them to address that and make suggestions to that rather than coming up with their own plan, which has to have its own assumptions and so on already built in.
Exactly. And this approach to the problem avoids a much bigger problem. That is us ending up in a situation where, as the manager, we've got one, two, three, four, however many people on the team, plans that are essentially equal, all with different approaches, different underlying assumptions. And those differences make sorting out which plan is the best, essentially starting place, much more difficult.
Yep.
We have four plans that are essentially equivalent in their value. It's hard to determine where we're going to start.
Right.
So it leads to just basic inefficiency.
Yep.
I mean, we're busy building the plan now as opposed to trying out a plan.
Right. Yeah. Now, certainly. Is it possible somebody will say, well, I've got a completely different way of approaching this? Sure, of course it is. And folks, don't fear it. Maybe their approach or plan or play is better than yours. If so, hallelujah. Okay. Thank them for their input. Make a self-deprecatory joke. Well, clearly I'm not the smartest person in this room.
Exactly.
Right? But the fact that someone might have a better play to run than yours, which is still well in the minority of all the situations we've ever been in, that alone, the fact that they might, is not a sufficient reason to demote your plan into a free-for-all with everybody else's or anyone else's plan.
Exactly. And folks, there's another reason why saying, this is what I think we should do, without making it clear that your plan has some extra heft or some extra thought behind it, it is because it's yours. And if no one else offers anything up, your plan ends up winning a competition against essentially nothing.
Yeah.
Now, that not only doesn't inspire confidence in an existing plan, oh, yay, the best of the worst, possibly in my mind. But frankly, we've seen it where it actually demotes the plan.
Yeah.
It makes people feel like it leaves a taste in the mouth that it comes across as though, well, this plan is the only plan. I suppose it's better than nothing. Bare minimum here, right? And communicating in a way that can cause this outcome, that is, people to feel discouragement in your plan, isn't what a leader would do.
Yeah, and if you say, well, here's a suggestion, and you imply that everybody has a full seat at the table, which from a creative perspective, everybody does, and then nobody responds, it literally, I think maybe this is the origin of the phrase, well, this plan is only better than nothing, because literally nothing was offered up against it, which, again, it just doesn't inspire confidence. Now, look, if somebody else wants to suggest changes, not offer their own plan, but just suggest changes to yours, consider them. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're better. Use them if they're better.
Absolutely.
By describing your plan as the play you're going to run, you're not saying it's unchangeable or infallible unless you've already built that reputation among your team, which certainly happens. Of course, we want to ask for input. Anybody have any ideas? Anybody have any changes? Thank them for their ideas, whether you choose to use the change or not. Maybe somebody suggests, well, I think we should do this versus that. Well, actually, no, I thought about that a little bit and I decided we'll do it this way. I'm not sure which way is better, but unless you can describe why putting 4 as number 3 and 3 as number 4 is better, we'll just go with this. And look, asking for changes as opposed to saying, here's what I think we should do, that denotes confidence in your plan, not worry, like I'm afraid there's errors in here. I expect you guys to sharpshoot me and find out what they were. And look, we're not trying to win the authorship contest. We're trying to create a good plan, and we have to lead by example.
Exactly. And something we also read in popular management press, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of our listeners today are thinking this as well because of that dialogue we've all heard, is that if you proffer your play first, it might cause others to not share their plan or idea. That is, or so it goes. Some people are uncomfortable sharing when the boss has already laid out a plan. Consider instead letting them share first. And folks, this is wrong for so many reasons. If you are a manager tools manager, that is, you are doing one-on-ones with your folks, you are already building trust such that, to our point earlier, they're going to speak up when you ask for contributions to the plan. This letting them share first elevates the idea, again, something we've dissuaded you from doing earlier, that is, everyone must be heard to absurd levels. If we've done our job as a manager, we've made it clear that ideas are always welcome. One-on-ones, trust first. There's no need to bend over backwards as a manager to make someone else comfortable sharing their ideas when we've been investing in the relationship all along. Effective managers know that encouraging others to provide input is saying, have the courage to overcome your discomfort.
Yeah. And yeah, the whole issue of comfort comes up over and over again. We hear this more and more nowadays. Well, people aren't comfortable with that. Gosh, I think managers ought to understand by now. How many people sit around going, I'm comfortable as a manager. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to do things I'm comfortable with. Most people, when they come to us and they find our podcast and say, wow, I needed this help years ago, they've been uncomfortable for years.
Yeah, so exactly.
clearly discomfort.
It's part of the job.
Right.
Other duties as required.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Whatever the boss asks.
Exactly.
To do. The idea that somebody's uncomfortable and so therefore we should modify to make them comfortable. It's like, no, sorry guys, discomfort. Actually, there's a lot of psychological studies that show that the ideal place for humans to perform at is right at the edge of significant discomfort. In other words, you there's comfort, there's lazing around on a lazy Sunday afternoon, and then there's right at the limit of what your mind and body can take. And just less than what right at the limit of what your mind and body can take is often the ideal kind of productive state to be in. So this idea that everybody has to be comfortable is misleading. And of course, we know that you're probably thinking, yeah, okay, Mark, okay, Sarah, it's misleading, but HR is always breathing down my neck. Our solution to that, I think Sarah alluded to, is build your trust with your people through one-on-ones, and then you don't need to feel that everything else needs to make them comfortable all the time, because they will be comfortable with you naturally because you have earned their trust. Okay, so now the play's been finalized, whether it had input or not, and you're implementing the play. The moment you start implementing it, actually, probably the moment you start writing it down, this is, your plan has become a page in your playbook.
Yes.
And look, we said it might be the first time. It might be the first one. If you're hearing this cast and you've never heard of a managerial playbook, it's the first. And well done you for doing it. You created it from scratch yourself. You didn't need to, quote, know, unquote, but from what you thought and what you assumed and what you guessed. That's a big part of the job of a manager and certainly of a leader. Mm-hmm. I always love the quote, if you want to predict the future, invent it. And that means doing stuff you've never done before.
Absolutely. Being uncomfortable.
Yeah. Of all the playbook pages in the managerial world, the vast majority are created this way. You creating it with an iteration on your first go around. And frankly, that's the way it's been since the beginning of management. It maybe shouldn't be, but it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So to wrap up this portion, I'm going to call it, of our agenda today, folks, at some point, the tactics of management will be more well known. And at Manager Tools, that's one of the things we're trying to help with, making these tactics known. Yeah. And at some point, managers are going to be taught a standard playbook and an industry playbook and a company playbook and a departmental playbook, and given all the things they knew to do their jobs successfully. But until then, you're going to have to mostly create your own.
Yeah. And that's why we're here, right? To help.
That's exactly it. Hey, folks, there are only a few conferences remaining to close out the 2022 public conference year. We've got three events remaining this year in North America, the first of which is November 29th, 30th, and December 1st in Silicon Valley, where we will be visiting with our Effective Hiring Manager, Effective Manager, and Effective Communicator conferences. The following two conferences remaining in the year, both of our December events, are December 6th and 7th in Chicago, and December 13th and 14th in Washington, D.C., both of which are inclusive of the Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. We'd love to have you join us there. You can register today online at manager-tools.com/training. See you there. Moving on to the next piece of our guidance, that is, you don't necessarily need to start from scratch. You can always copy another's playbooks.
Yeah. The second way, the second most common way that managers add plays or pages to their playbook, get them from somebody else or from somewhere else. And we mentioned, right, if you're a Manager Tools licensee, you already have an organized playbook in our map of the universe. Although you have to log in and you have to go look for the individual shows. It reminds me of Stephen Wright, who's a famous sort of deadpan comic who years ago said, one of his jokes was, I have a very large seashell collection. I don't know if you've seen it. I've scattered it up and down the eastern seaboard of the United States.
That's right? A good one.
So maybe the map of the universe is not your way of organizing your playbook. Maybe you want to go in, and if you're a licensee, again, you can get show notes, and you could print out show notes, and you could maybe highlight four or five things, and you could put those in a playbook. That's great. I mean, obviously, that's the whole point of what we're doing, is that there will be a body of work available to everyone, all managers in the world, so that the vast majority of situations they have, they are not running a fresh play. I would argue, in fact, that by 5 o'clock in a really high op-tempo environment, by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, managers are basically, all of us really, are basically brain dead. And we encourage you not to be making big decisions then. Well, if we had playbooks, and every single time, two or three or four times a day, that emergent situation came up and we don't really know what to do, but you had a playbook and you would turn to it and it's on your phone, for instance, it's in an app like Manager Tools app, and you could just go to it and say, okay, here's the outline. Those of you who have looked at show notes know that after we have the title and the questions that this podcast answers and sort of an introduction, then there's the outline. And the outline could literally be the one thing you put in, print out and put into your playbook, or take a snapshot and make it into a digital record and name those pages however you want. We're a source, and there are other sources as well beyond just us.
That's absolutely true. Also, Mark, when you were speaking a moment ago, I thought to myself, you referred to a playbook that we as managers personally need at 5 p.m. And I hope other people out there were thinking, oh, you mean if I create this playbook, I could go on vacation and my team could do this job without me and they wouldn't have to phone me while I'm at Disney with my kids or spending time with my spouse or doing all those kinds of things.
Right. The only problem with being at Disney with your kids and your spouse is that those managers secretly want to be back at the office. Even though they're happy to be on vacation, mm-hmm. they secretly are afraid that something bad's going to go wrong. And so they answer their phone. And actually, they think it makes them feel important. And it makes them, to some degree, look important to their kids. And of course, that's just not so.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wrong. Yeah.
Okay. So yes, as Mark mentioned, a likely source of playbook starter material is manager tools. And there are a couple of other sources of pages for our playbooks that come to us or deliver to us in a training-like format. So things like MBA programs. That is, if you went did an MBA program, you could add those types of things to your playbook. Other managers' plays.
Right.
Peers.
That's the big one.
Your manager, whomever in the organization, past experiential playbook. Now, note, to go back to the MBA comment, don't get an MBA if you're thinking it teaches you anything about being an actual manager. It doesn't teach you how to be an actual manager and lead people. It teaches you a ton of organizational stuff and finance, corporate, math, strategy,
right,
which are much more executive topics than the day-to-day management topic kind of playbooks, but it'll give you some of that thinking as well.
Yeah, you mentioned training, like an MBA, for instance. Certainly our training would be in there. I would think if you come to the Effective Manager Conference, you could easily say, yeah, the Trinity is a playbook. And the EMC lays it all out in annoying detail, because that's what we want if we were being trained. Tell me what to do and tell me how to do it.
Exactly.
And you can use pages from other managers' playbooks. Mm-hmm. But there's a subtlety to that other people's playbooks that I think a lot of people miss. And that's, if a situation arises for which you don't have a play to run and it's not urgent, in other words, you have time to spend 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour thinking and potentially asking friends or mentors or colleagues or respected superiors, ask them what they would do.
Yeah.
They may not yet have a page in their playbook, but they have enough experience that suddenly when asked the question, they say, oh, well, I can tell you here. Okay. In light of some stuff you don't even know yet, Mark, here's what I recommend you do. And they essentially dictate to you over the phone what their play would be, even though they wouldn't think of that play as being in their playbook. At worst case, they're going to have some general ideas. I will say this, as I think we mentioned earlier in the show, in the first part of the show, don't get too excited if someone starts talking about how you're supposed to be. Be strategic, be creative, be thoughtful, be collaborative, all that sort of stuff. That's not action-based guidance. That is to be as opposed to do. And playbooks are do X. If you look at a playbook for the NFL, right, in American football, you see X's and O's moving. They actually say, okay, go here, do this, hit, block this guy. Right? That's not be creative. That's not just saying do your job. It gives you specific activities to undertake. And so if you start hearing that, say, thank you so much. Take those notes. You can keep those thoughts in the back of your mind, but that person is proving to you they don't have a play either in their playbook or off the top of their head. In fact, probably they'll never have a play if they talk to you like that. If you ask somebody, don't ask them, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Say, hey, there's this situation. What should I do?
Yeah, what should I do?
And if you ask for the doing and you get the being, that person's essentially saying, I don't know what to tell you what to do.
Exactly. And some of you might be thinking, okay, people might be hesitant to share their playbooks. Something to keep in mind is you're much more likely to get playbooks from them by sharing things that you've already captured. That is, they may not have their own thoughts at the ready. Mark referred earlier, he said, phone them, because we say phone them, speak to them, because this is best done verbally. And if you call someone and ask them, they may not have their own thoughts at the ready, But running down your play, that is step by step with them, might help surface their thoughts on improvement.
Yeah.
So instead of just that open-ended, hey, what should I do? Or what would you do? I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And yeah, walking through your steps might cause them to remember instances where something worked or something didn't work, or might allow them to add benefit, value to what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know, let's go a step further. Sarah is my mentor. And so I am a manager. I've got this situation coming up. One of my people pokes his head into my office and says, hey, Mark, we got this thing. This customer is saying this, and I've never heard this before. What do you think we should do? And they're demanding immediate attention and so on. And, you know, Sarah used to run this department. She's now been promoted a couple of times. She's always told me, you need help, call. So I call and I say, hey, dude, what do you think? I'm a little bit nervous, important customer. I know there'll be executive eyes on this. What should I do? And I say, here's my first thoughts. I think there are four things I got to worry about, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Sarah then says, no, actually, that makes total sense what you just said, Mark, but no, don't do that because this customer plays golf with the CFO and what he cares about is terms. You can charge him more as long as you let him pay over a longer period of time. He's the CFO. That's what he thinks about, right? Now, you couldn't have known that, right? You don't know this customer plays golf with the CFO, you know, whatever. So you had a play and you get a new play from your mentor or your boss or whatever. In this case, Sarah's my mentor. You tear out the old play, or you can create a new play. But if this situation, you had four steps that you came up with for this situation and my mentor Sarah's play is better, more specific and so on, I tear out the old one and I put the new one in. Okay. Then two things. I've got to say, hey, thanks, boss. I would not have known to do that. Great lesson for me. Thank you. And folks, you will get a lot further in the professional world if you will ask more often and thank more often.
Yeah.
There is I think we had some guy, we were talking about onboarding. I don't know. Maybe it was the M conference a couple of weeks ago. And somebody said something about how can I get people to ask more when they're onboarding them, they're brand new. I said, you should tell them, hey, new guy, we know you don't know what's going on. So you ain't fooling us by sitting there not asking questions. In your head, we were all there. We've all done this before. You're like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means, right? Right? So in this case, you definitely want to tell your boss, your mentor, whoever helped you, exactly why.
Yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate this. I was going to do X and now I'm doing Y. It's better. Then the next thing, I've always been lucky. I've had good mentors in my career. To some degree, and then my mentor, up until I started my own firm years ago, but then my mentors, in many cases, became senior executive customers. But I would always say, thank you. And one of my mentors said, and look, when you learn something, tell your people you learned something. So the example he used with me is, if you learn that what you're doing is wrong or whatever, tell your whole team, hey, we were going to do steps 1, 2, 3. And now I realize, no, we can't do 3. My old boss, she pointed it out. You know, it doesn't make sense because of this situation with the CFO or whatever else. So guys, I wanted you to know, I had this play. We're going to have 4 steps. We've now cut it down to 3 because of this input. So, hey, if you ever run into her, tell her thanks because it saved us a whole bunch of time and frustration. And you're also setting an example to your people, not just the tactics of the plan or the play that's in your playbook, but you're also telling them how you learned about it, what the process was that you built your playbook with. And I just think these are the kind of things managers just aren't forthcoming with their learning process. And your learning process, usually, it's not like you go to a class. Your learning process is much more organic than that. You ask some questions, you talk to some buddies, and you get 2 or 3 different ideas, and you say, wait, I can put 2 of these ideas together, and that'll be a complete plan. Mm-hmm. And so you tell your people, hey, I called this guy. Too many managers think that the answer is, don't let your people know how you cobbled this together, because I don't get credit for it. Well, first of all, why do you want credit for it when other people contributed?
Right.
More importantly, why would you suggest to them they should never reach out to anyone else because they're supposed to have all these plans already in their head. And then they don't, and they spend their time going, I don't have a plan. I don't have a plan. I don't have a plan. And if every second in your head you're saying, I don't have a plan, I'm panicking, I don't have a plan, you ain't thinking of any new plans because your brain can only think of one thing at a time. And I just don't know why managers don't do more of that. Hey, look, by the way, I'll tell you how I learned this. I think I remember somebody told me years ago, their favorite podcast, Manager Tools, mm-hmm. was Race Don't Chase. And it's easily in my top 10. And part of the reason it's in my top 10 is because I learned it from a friend of mine, Robin Lineberger, who was the CEO of a firm, and I was consulting to his firm. And we were in a meeting, and he said, we were talking about something, and I was saying, you know, it's getting to the point now. Things are getting dicey in the industry. He says, yep, race don't chase. And I immediately knew what he meant, right? You got to race you have to race your costs or your revenue to the bottom and beat it to the bottom so you stay profitable during a downturn. And it just summed up years of things that I'd kind of known, but I never would have been able to communicate it like that. And then he made a couple other points. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's why he's a CEO. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't, you know, gosh, I'm happy to use anything not invented here if it's better than what I invented here.
That's all for this week, folks. For the next couple of weeks, we will be joining you with our annual Thanksgiving Hall of Fame annual review cast release. What that means is we'll resume with part 3 of this topic on December 5th. Bye, guys.